Hey there, welcome in. Coming to you live from the capital city of the great state of Texas. We're overlooking downtown Austin and the University of Texas. Welcome to the podcast that understands the pride and tradition of the Texas football program. We'll never be entrusted to the timid or the weak. It is the latest episode of the Eyes on Texas multicast. The EOT is a product of the Republic of Football on Dave Campbell's Texas Football Podcast Network. I'm Aaron Hogan, morning show host, 102.7 ESPN here in Austin. Been covering the Longhorns for 25, 30 years now. He, of course, is the senior writer at Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine, knee-deep in this year's edition for 2024. He is my great friend, Mike Craven. Mike, how are you, bud?
Doing pretty good. I cannot describe the existential dread of building a college football magazine in the middle of the portal being open. Every time I write something, I erase it and rewrite it. So it is a struggle, but we'll get through and we'll get that magazine out there.
Yeah, the struggle is real, and I can think all of our audience can understand. I mean, you're trying to write a magazine that won't come out till July, and things are changing by the day. Now, obviously, the portal closes here coming up end of the month, right? There's 15 days, and then we think things will be solid at that point. And so then that's got to make you feel pretty good. There's only another week of this, and then everything should settle in. And we'll talk about the Longhorns coming up, who's in the portal leaving, or some guys that have already committed elsewhere, and then folks that the Longhorns are trying to get after, spots they need to fill coming out of spring. But at least you know it's going to close here shortly.
Yeah, it's going to close here shortly, and there'll be some additions probably late that we won't get into the magazine, but hopefully we won't have anybody in the magazine that's no longer on that team. The problem is, though, I owe about 35,000 words of content, and you can't wait until May 1st to write it all. So you have to just start writing it and then go back and editing. So it's a lot of cross-checking, a lot of keeping up with stuff. Something slipped by you, right? Like I missed the Sam Brown moving from Houston News, figured that out yesterday and had to go back and rewrite some. So it's just kind of shifting sands at all times this time in college football. I think it's just a 12-month out of the year reality until they kind of get some government and figure out who's in charge and try to make some rules.
Yeah. And as we know, that's going to have to be collectively bargained now, right? There's going to have to be a negotiation that happens on how all that works, who is in control, who answers to who, what the road, the guardrails look like. A lot to be ironed out. And, we think about it, moving forward to December when the 12-team playoff is happening, Mike, and the portal opens. I mean, that's everyone's biggest conversation and fear. We saw it last year with some bowl games. Malik Murphy transferred before the Longhorn bowl game. It's now you're going to have teams playing in the playoff for four weeks to 6 weeks. So a lot to work out and a lot of conversations. But obviously, this is the Eyes on Texas multicast and podcast, and excited to talk about the spring game. And Mike, I know you've been busy driving all over the state, covering all the schools in the state. And I saw you were in Lubbock. You were down at Texas. You're down at Texas A&M. You've been logging the miles here this April.
11 schools in 15 days, started on April 2nd, drove all the way around. I think I did 1,950 miles on the truck during that drive. So it's a lot of fun. Like I enjoy going to all the colleges and talking to the coaches and some players. I get some access that not everybody gets. The problem is you get home, you have all of those interviews and you go, oh, now I got to do my actual job and transcribe and write it all. And so it's just drinking through a fire hose and trying to keep track of what you heard at TCU versus what you heard at Lubbock versus what you heard at North Texas. Juggling all that can be tough, but that's the life and it's fun. I don't know how the national guys do it where they got to figure out 133 teams. Doing 13 is enough for me.
Yeah, 11 schools in 15 days, and then, yeah, come back and sort it all out. We'll get some thoughts on some of the spots you've been, but obviously we focus on the Longhorns. Their spring game was Saturday to wrap up the 4 weeks of spring practice, the 15th practice, and I think a lot accomplished, Mike. I want to talk about the game itself, but, I heard it from everybody, including Steve Sarkisian. We had Fozzie Whitaker on the radio show. He called it on LHN, said it's the most exciting spring game he's ever been around, high school, college, pro. It just was. I mean, it went to the wire, 35-34, the backup quarterback and the third-string quarterback, Arch Manning and Trey Owens going back and forth, dueling, 35-34 final with a touchdown late. I think it speaks to the depth of this team and the competitiveness of this camp, but I don't know that we've ever seen normally by the fourth quarter, that they're just kind of going through the motions trying to get to the end of it, not getting anybody hurt. They actually played a game here, and it went to the last Hail Mary of Arch Manning's.
Yeah, not every program can do that. I mean, you're starting to see more and more teams kind of cancel spring game or make it a glorified practice, kind of an inter-squad scrimmage, and it's because they don't have the depth. It's a lot like Sark in year one, where he couldn't really have a true spring game because he didn't have enough offensive linemen. Texas is in a unique situation where they have three or four deep at a lot of positions, can cycle those guys through and keep a competitive spring game. And like you mentioned, when you're third on the depth chart, but you feel like you're just as good as the first guy on the depth chart, like you're trying to prove that, you know, especially in front of the fans in a game type situation. So it felt like the old days, right? It felt like during Mac Brown's golden year where you go to the spring game, or golden years when you go to the spring game to see those big time matchups. But you also go to see those incoming five-star freshmen or maybe some guys who redshirted the year before that are now out of the oven and ready to go compete. There was a lot of flashing. I watched the spring game for two reasons: to see individual performances and to kind of notice where the position group deficiencies are. Like that's kind of how I watch a spring game. Texas didn't have a lot of the second one, and they had a whole lot of the first one. That's a lot of momentum in Austin. They're excited about you. When you talk to Sark, you can tell a lot like going into last year, he is uber confident with this roster and this team right now.
Yeah, no doubt. And consider, to your point of not many programs can do this, you know, in addition to what we saw, you know, the foundational players on the team didn't play much at all, if at all. I mean, barely, if at all. It was almost like a NFL, you know, first preseason game. Quinn Ewers got two series and was out. I mean, Kelvin Banks, Jake Majors, Trey Moore, the transfer from UTSA, Jade Barron, Manny Muhammad. Those guys were pretty much standing on the sidelines watching this game, and you still saw a lot of talent, Mike. I mean, you take off your, you know, six, seven, eight best players if you're going through a draft, and then what was left was still pretty darn talented, which speaks to why Sark is excited about what's coming this year and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, when Texas was really good, they always talked about how practice was harder than most of their games, right? They played two or three opponents that were harder than the practice. I've heard, you know, Rod Babers and those guys talk about that a lot. It feels like Texas is getting back to that. Obviously, the SEC, there's going to be more NFL talent in each one of those games than maybe in the Big 12. But I do think Texas is getting back to a spot where, you know, Malik Muhammad's not going to see a wide receiver better than, you know, Isaiah Bond or even Ryan Wingo, right? You just don't see a lot of those guys, right? And so, like, iron's going to sharpen iron. You know, Trey Moore is not going to get blocked by anybody better than Kelvin Banks. You know, like, stuff like that, right? And so, I think you see the depth, you see the overall talent, and that's what all these coaches always talk about. It feels cliche, but you want practice to be as competitive, if not more competitive, than a game. Most programs can't actually achieve that goal. Looks like Sark in Texas is there now.
Yeah, very good. Well, and I will report to our Eyes on Texas cast audience that we did on the morning show I do here in town on 102.7 ESPN, talked to Fozzie Whitaker, and he was a great conversation because he talked about, you know, the spring game. We didn't get to see Quinn much. We didn't get to see Trey Moore much. But he went to all the practices and the scrimmages during the month, and he described Trey Moore as a dog. He said he is everything as advertised. He had a great spring. He's going to bring that edge pressure. You're a UTSA grad, so you got to see Trey. A kid out of Smithson Valley, but Fozzie couldn't stop raving about what he saw from Trey Moore. Fans didn't get to see it Saturday. And for anybody wondering about Quinn Ewers, you know, Fozzie, of course, who played in the NFL for 6 or 7 years, knows the game very, very well. One of the smarter, you know, football people to be around. He said Quinn had a great spring. Really, really felt like he was locked in, building that chemistry with receivers. It didn't look great for the one or two series he was out there. But, you know, Fozzie said, you know, that's fake news. He had a great spring. That's what Sark said too, Mike, that, you know, I know what I have in Quinn. He's had a great spring. He's ready to roll and lead this team into the summer.
Yeah, going into year three with this offense and Steve Sarkisian, you know, year four now as a college football player, he's clearly kind of the leader and the quarterback of this football team. But the last couple of years, he's missed at least two games, right, with injuries. Like, you're going to play multiple quarterbacks. I went back and looked. Two of the 13 teams in the state of Texas last year started the same quarterback every single game, right? The year before, it was 2 of 12, right? So most teams are going to have an injury at the quarterback position. You want that backup to look really good. I think Texas has one of those unique quarterback rooms that again, in the NIL transfer portal era, you just can't build, right? Like, how many guys have a backup quarterback as good as Arch Manning? Trey Owens looked great as well. And so I think it just speaks to Steve Sarkisian's reputation as a quarterback builder, as an offensive builder. But yeah, I think Quinn Ewers is going to be fine. And I wouldn't draw too much, good or bad, from a spring game, especially two series in a spring game.
It does, continue to further my belief, and I say this a lot, that Quinn Ewers has as much or more pressure on him than any player in college football this year, just because of the position he's in at the school he's at, with the expectations that are there, and then who his backup quarterback is. I mean, that's just. I mean, I'm not saying he can't handle the pressure. I think it's a great thing. There's just a lot of pressure to perform, and what we saw from Arch Manning. We'll get into our second quarter here coming up. Talk about some of the stats from the offensive side. But what we saw from Arch Manning on Saturday, Mike, I saw Pat McAfee show the other day. They went 15 minutes talking about Arch Manning. I mean, this is the backup quarterback. So safe to say if Quinn gets off to a slow start, or, you know, the Michigan game, it's not great. You know that's coming. You know those conversations are going to be had. Feels like Sark is understanding of that as a quarterback himself. He's been around high-profile quarterback battles before. I mean, the quarterback room, Mike's the envy of every university and every school in the country, but there are going to be some challenges with it as far as that pressure and the hype and the media and the Manning name. I do feel like, and you've talked to Sark this month, that they have the right coach in place to handle that, juggle it, keep egos. I don't feel like there's a lot of egos between the guys, but at the same time, just understand how all this plays out, big picture.
I think one of the reasons Sark is so well equipped to be a college football coach right now is his professional experience as a coach, and kind of how that works. And he's running this program like a professional program. The college players wanted to be treated more like professionals, right? They wanted to get paid. They wanted to have the ability to move around. They wanted a lot more freedom in those kind of ways. And this is the other side of it, right? Like, when everybody's getting paid and you can train, you're going to constantly bring in dudes to compete. And that's going to be Quinn's life as an NFL quarterback. His entire career, and it's his life already at Texas. I think it sharpens your resolve and your ability to handle adversity. I do think for hardcore Texas fans, they're going to roll their eyes at a lot of the national media stuff, right? Like, Quinn's our guy. Sark says that. I don't know why these national media folk are spending so much time kind of berating this point of Quinn Ewers versus Arch Manning. But that's how it goes, right? Like, if you're Pat McAfee, you're not around the program every day. All you know is the Manning name, and you know it's not Quinn Ewers won the Heisman or was going to be a first round draft pick. That's why he came back. And so anytime there's that kind of name behind you, and when he throws for 350 yards and a few touchdowns, like, it's going to get the national folks talking in a way that is going to make some of the local media and the local fans and the hardcores a little bit uncomfortable. But that's going to be life in the SEC. It's going to be life for Quinn Ewers with Arch Manning behind him.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you a lot on Sark treating it like a pro team, because it really is. I mean, these guys are all making NIL dollars, especially at the top end of the roster, and you just got to manage that, and that comes with the territory. And again, it just takes a bad game or two, and then those conversations crop up. As we transition into our second quarter and talk about the offense in particular, we saw Quinn for two series. What stood out to you? Obviously, Arch Manning, 355 yards. He completed, I think he was 5 for 5 or 10 for his first 10. Really accurate, really confident in the pocket, spreading the ball around. He threw three touchdowns. Could have been a fourth, Mike, with Isaiah Bond right before the half there, dropped one that would have been a touchdown. They had a settle for a field goal. He was really, really sharp. I mean, what we saw last year in the spring game from Quinn, where he looked like he was getting ready for his high school prom and a little lost playing out there playing with the walk-ons, looked like a totally different player 1 year later.
Yeah, I mean, the quarterback position, I mean, Trey Owens is somebody that stood out to me when I watched the spring game. Cam Williams at right tackle, I thought, played really well. The fact that nobody's talked about it, I think, is the perfect result you want as a right tackle. Like, the less people that – it's like Kelvin Banks. Like, nobody ever talked about Kelvin Banks being a true freshman left tackle because he was playing so well, right? I think Cam Williams played really well. You know, Sark, after the spring game, kind of talked in his presser about how our edge rushers are really good and they didn't show up in the spring game. And I think some of that's an attribute, a credit to the tackles. But the thing that stood out to me the most, besides Arch Manning, is I think this skill position room's better than it was last year. And I said this going into the spring on this podcast, and I got some messages like kind of rolling their eyes, like, hey, calm down a little bit. But I do think that the depth is better. There wasn't a Ryan Wingo. Like, Jonte Cook's taken a huge leap. Isaiah Bond is as advertised. Silas Bolden isn't even on campus yet. Matthew Golden's not healthy. You know, we saw DeAndre Moore and what he can do behind. Like, they don't have just two guys and then you just figure out what you're going to do after that. They got 6-7 legit wide receiver options. And that's before we even talk about the tight end position. And I think that's what's advantageous to Quinn Ewers, is he doesn't have to be the whole offense, right? He has to be the driver of the car and get all of those special pieces on the outside, the ball, hand off the ball, be smart with the football, let the offensive line and defensive line go win. That was the part that really stood out. It's just like how many accessories this offense has, how much explosiveness that this offense has, and just the talent around the quarterback.
Yeah. And we posted a Twitter poll on the show, on the radio station webpage today about our Twitter page. What's the deepest position on offense? You know, is it quarterback? Is it running back? Is it receiver? Is it offensive line? And to your point about the offensive line and Cam Williams, you know, we'll talk about it more when we talk portal at the end of the fourth quarter there. But, you know, lineman Peyton Kirkland, who jumped into the portal before the spring game, he's already committed to Colorado, where they are projecting him as a starter there on the interior, potentially as a guard. He was running third team here, Mike. I mean, he was a third string guy. So he's going to start at a Big 12 school at Colorado potentially immediately. He was third team, and that's where the depth is across the board on the offense. There's some more holes on the defense, which we'll talk about coming up, but agree with you. And I'll say this about Trey Owens, the kid from Cy Fair, the third string quarterback who came in and was throwing darts. You know, just think about Arch Manning last year and how he looked a little bit lost and it was too fast for him. Well, Trey Owens is the same age as Arch was last year. And it didn't – you want to talk about a guy that was ready to get out there and sling the ball around and make plays. I mean, he wasn't the equal of Arch, but it was pretty close. He was over 200 yards and took his team on a game-winning touchdown drive. That was really impressive.
6A high school Texas football prepares you a little bit more than that private school stuff that they're playing in Louisiana. And so Trey Owens had seen some speed. He's been around that kind of talent before. I don't think it's much of a culture shock when you come from that kind of high school with that kind of talent, with those kind of runs into the playoffs, as it is for if you're a 2A, 3A football player. And that's what I would equate what Arch Manning was playing against. He was playing taps football, right? Like I think the 2A state champion in Texas would have beat the brakes off of the high school that Arch Manning was playing at. There's just a different level here, and playing public ball at the 6A level, I think, really helps a guy like Trey Owens adjust to the college game quicker.
Yeah, and I love Sark's comment afterwards. Said, you know, no shot at the guys who put stars on quarterbacks, which was a shot at the guys who put stars on quarterbacks. But he said, we trust our evaluation and we like Trey Owens. I went to Cypress Creek, and I've got a good buddy of mine who coaches there at Cy Fair, their defensive line, and you know, they raved about his competitiveness. He's just, you know, kind of Sam Ellinger in the way he competes and the will to win. And heck, he led Cy Fair to a win over Mighty Katy in the playoffs down in the Houston area this year. They didn't get beyond that, but man, that's, you beat Katy, where it's a monster. You know, that tells you where they are right now. And Trey Owens coming in here to compete, and that's another thing I like. I mean, competitor, you're committing to a quarterback room that already has Quinn and Arch Manning, and you're willing to come in here and compete and arguably wait your turn, learn from Sark, and be the man. He really balled out. I thought the entire offense was really good. Anything stand out for you, Mike, with the running backs? You know, there was word throughout the summer or the spring that Jaden Blue might have been the best running back on campus. It's not even a knock on C.J. Baxter. We know C.J. is going to continue to develop, but that Jaden Blue has gotten the weight room, and he's been waiting his turn behind these great backfields. And last year was Jonathan Brooks, but, you know, he's a home run hitter. We know it. But he's put on some weight upstairs. He was running through some tackles, running over people. And, you know, Jaden Blue was asked during an availability who he patterns his game after. And he mentioned Jahmyr Gibbs, the Alabama running back that went to the Detroit Lions. And, of course, Tashard Choice coached Jahmyr Gibbs back at Georgia Tech. So got to feel good about the 1-2 combination of those two running backs.
Yeah, I mean, Blue knows that it's his turn, and he can go make a lot of money for himself like Jonathan Brooks did the last year by being the explosive kind of coming-of-age running back at Texas. As you mentioned, he's had to wait behind three, top three-round draft picks, you know, at that position. He's competing with a five-star. And so, you know, adding some weight was always kind of the thing he needed to do. He's always had the athleticism. He's always been super fast. You know, that was the book on him coming out of Klein. So if he's stronger and can handle the stuff in between the tackles, help with the fumbles, right? You're a little bit stronger in the upper body. Maybe some of those hits or some of those strips don't pop the football out. I think Texas has a really good dynamic at running back because neither of those guys do the same thing, right? It's a real true thunder and lightning type deal. C.J. Baxter lit up Michael Taft, right? Like that. I mean, he bulldozed him. And that's the kind of physicality. Yeah, that physicality from the running game. If you can get that in the third, fourth quarter, you know, Blues kind of, you know, your legs are tired and you got one running back running past you. Your legs are tired and you got one running back running over you. That's going to be a good sign in the fourth quarter, like what we saw in Alabama where Jonathan Brooks kind of iced that game away. You know, Sark has the reputation of being the passing quarterback coach. But he likes to run the football like he always has in his career. I think that balance is important with this offensive line and that stable of running backs. I don't think the running game is going to take a step back.
Agree with that. And yeah, we did see CJ Baxter broke like three tackles and then trucked Michael Taft, who had gotten low, and it was a great collision. That was good stuff right there. I think that happened when they were interviewing someone on the LHN broadcast at the time. So I don't know if they highlighted it as much as they would.
They were talking to Bijan. They were talking to Bijan when it happened.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, there's some Rojo there with that toughness from CJ Baxter. And you're right. I mean, Sark likes to build a big lead and then run the clock out and wear someone down. They does have a team that feels like can be there. As for the running backs, portal again, as we take this, Savion Redd has entered the transfer portal, as has Kai Woods, the walk-on. So both of those guys are going. But look, this room, the guy that Sark talked about the whole camp was Trey Wisner. The Trey Wisner was the guy that was showing up all the time. And if you're Savion Redd and you're losing that spot and you're now third or fourth, you can understand Savion, who really doesn't have a position right now. Speak to that, Mike. Savion's going to have some demand in the portal market, I believe. But then Trey Wisner's a guy that you kind of see filling that Keelan Robinson role, right? Kind of the gadget player, special teams, but can help in two down sets and those kind of things. I really like that room because when you had Trey Wisner, the conversation.
Yeah, I think with Trey, even going back to high school, he's never been the most talked about player on the offense, right? Like he's always kind of been an underrated guy, even as a state champion at the high school level. Now he's on the same offense with Jonte Cook, and Cook got all that recognition and had the big state championship game. But every time you watch a game with Trey White, he's always moving forward. He never loses yards. He's just one of those solid players. He doesn't have the Jaden Blue explosiveness. He doesn't have the upside of a CJ Baxter, but he's a damn good running back that when you mix with those guys and you put him in the right situation, I think that's what Sark does so well. He never square pegs around hole, right? Like it's always, hey, here's what this guy does really, really, really well. We're going to put him in a position to do those things really well, and we're not going to ask him to do all the stuff that he doesn't do as well. And I think Trey Wisner is not going to be asked to be the three down, carry the ball 25 times a game running back that maybe he's just not quite there to be yet. But if he gets to be the third down guy and a bit player and on some 21 personnel, they got two running backs in there, I think Trey's going to be a weapon that you look back at the end of the season and go, hey, he had a much bigger year than maybe the average fan thought he was going to have.
It's a very deep room. The receivers, by the way, from the spring game, we talked about the quarterbacks, over 500 yards and three touchdowns for Arch, two touchdowns for Trey Moore. Isaiah Bond had eight targets. He threw, three catches, over 100 yards and a touchdown. He caught that big one late that brought the white team back. DeAndre Moore had three targets, 93 yards and a touchdown. Ryan Wingo, you mentioned him, along with Jonte Cook. Both of those guys caught four balls. Wingo had the two touchdowns, and it was good to see. And we know what Jonte Cook can do, Mike, and you've seen him since high school. But Ryan Wingo, outside of Trey Wisner, I can't think of an offensive player that Sark singled out more than Ryan Wingo during camp. And then to see him show up like he did, run right past Kobe Black on that long touchdown catch from Trey Moore. Trey Owens, I should say. I mean, that guy is special. I mean, he's got the size and the track speed.
Yeah, Ryan Wingo's a 3 years and paid player, right? I mean, he's one of those one drill players, right? You watch him do one thing and you go, okay, hype's real. Because he's not a Texas guy. So like I don't know a ton about Ryan Wingo. I didn't watch him in high school. I'm not as close to the recruiting as I used to be. And so the first time I was at Texas practice and you start to see him run some routes against some guy, you're like, oh, okay, well, they nailed that one, right? Like you don't have to worry if that guy's going to be a real five-star or not. There is a lot of really good receivers, true freshman receivers in college football coming into this year. Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State, maybe leading the way. The kid that's in Auburn, I think it's Cam Coleman or whatever his name is, that was an A&M commit that's now at Auburn. So there, Ryan Wingo's right there. Ryan Wingo's right there with him. We talk too much, maybe not you and I, but just in general, I think we maybe focus too much on starting lineup outside of quarterback, maybe the offensive line, most of those guys rotate. I left the spring game going, whose job is Ryan Wingo taking? Because you can't leave that off the football field. Like you have a player like, I mean, it looks like Roy Williams. You have a player like that. You put him on the football field. And I know they brought in those three transfers and they also have Jonte Cook. And they also have DeAndre Moore and guys that they really, really like. But Ryan Wingo feels undeniable that he's just a dude that's going to have to get the ball five, six, seven times a game because he's that good.
Yeah, and makes defensive coordinators sweat. I mean, if you got Jonte Cook and that kind of speed, Isaiah Bond, that kind of speed, and then you throw that guy out there, just matchup problems. And to your point about Quinn Ewers just managing the team, right? It's kind of like Mac Jones when Sark was at Alabama. And Sark's, I think Quinn's a more talented quarterback, can spin the ball, better arm, those kind of things than even a Mac Jones. It's that same kind of offense. And that was the year that Alabama averaged 50 points a game and, you know, won the national championship. So
I do think that's what this offense is going to be. Like, yeah. I think this offense is going to walk into the SEC and average 35 plus points a game. Like, I have no doubts about what the Texas offense is going to be. The next quarter is where I think the make or break what Texas's ceiling is for the year.
Yep. Let's flip to the third quarter, talk defense. And yes, that was the first thing that I led the morning show on Monday with it. I didn't want to lead with negative, but you know, if Arch Manning is shredding your secondary, and if your third string quarterback, true freshman, is too, it's safe to say that I know we'll get to the defensive line and the portal additions they're trying to get there, but this secondary was the weakest point of the team last year. And now they've got a lot of new additions that have come in. But what I saw, not just, I mean, I know Jahdae Barron didn't play, Mike. I know Makuba played sparingly. I know Manny Muhammad was kind of taken, you know, safe, get played short and then was out. But just the technique, just the blown coverages, just, you know, they're playing basic vanilla defense. And, you know, it's one thing to give up all those touchdowns, but man, some of those were like on third and 20. They were being pushed down the field. That's my concern with Texas right now on defense, is this the coach there with Terry Joseph and Blake Gideon. They still feel like they technically don't play sound all the time, and they blow too many coverages.
Yeah, you don't see the offense making the same type of mental mistakes that the defense does. It's one thing to get beat by Ryan Wingo, like that Kobe Black play, right? Kobe Black misses the jam, gets a free release, you're toast. Like that's going to happen. But that's a true freshman cornerback figuring that stuff out. You know, the first touchdown by Arch Manning, nobody's around the wide receiver, right? I mean, that's a blown coverage. That's not a wide receiver beating a guy. That's a complete blown coverage. And that's got to be fixed. Like that the margins are too small. Like you can win 9 games playing that way. Are you going to win 11 and be an SEC champion and get a bye into the playoff playing that way? No, like the schedule's too good for those back end mistakes to be going on. Now you want to blame it on the deck shuffling. There's so many new guys. There's so many new faces. The defensive backfield is a lot like the offensive line, where you are super dependent on that guy next to you and you're kind of working as a unit. It's not so much just like everybody's playing man to man. And it just doesn't seem like the communication on the back end has been fixed. The talent's there, it feels like, at least on paper. But it doesn't feel like the communication and the assignment soundness has been ironed out yet. And this Texas offense is not one of those that you can play that way and not get exposed, right? I mean, that's the type of offense that is going to expose you if you're not that. It definitely feels like there is a strong side of the ball and a weak side of the ball, or at least a weak unit on that side of the ball. And until that secondary is better, you know, Texas is going to struggle against teams that have a lot of weapons.
Yeah, we saw the two losses last year to Michael Penix, to Dalen Gabriel, the secondary. Even a couple of those close calls where, you know, Will Howard brought K-State back and Houston was very close. And, you know, a lot of blown assignments in the back end. They're trying to change it. I mean, philosophically, they think Manny Muhammad and Terrence Brooks can be their outside corners that can really shut it down. And then to have, you know, versatile type players like Derek Williams at safety, like Andrew Makuba, like Jahdae Barron, who's, you know, preseason all Big 12 or all SEC potentially, you know, you see the pieces, but it kind of stands out to me, Mike, because the other positions on the football team, you're seeing the improvement, right?
Yeah.
Defensive line, offensive line improvement, development, quarterback development, receiver, running back. It still feels like they're lacking in development as far as the techniques of the game, the little things that matter on the secondary side. And that's obviously going to shine a spotlight on the secondary coaches.
Especially when you're playing against arguably the most talented skill position unit that you're going to see all year, right? I mean, as we talked about in the second quarter, like it gets really exasperated when you're facing those type of wide receivers, you're facing that type of offense, you're facing quarterbacks that can make every single one of those throws. It just puts a light on it. And, you know, especially after the issues the year before, because one thing, Texas secondary is usually pretty good. Like that's kind of, you know, the whole DBU thing. I think Texas fans are used to having a good secondary. It does feel like the the weak link coming out of spring and going into the season. You would have wanted to see it. I was at the A&M spring game. I watched the Texas one on replay. I was at the A&M spring game, and Mike Elko made a joke about how, as a head coach in a spring game, you see 122 bad plays, right? Because, like, if the offense is scoring, that means the defense isn't playing well. If the defense is playing well, that means the offense isn't executing, right? And so I think Sark is stuck between that, between, like, man, our offense and our skill position are great. I am so – also – my secondary, not so good. Is that because my offense is so great? Is that because the secondary hasn't taken any step? I think behind the scenes, there's those conversations going on of how much of this is the secondary unit, how much of this is just how good the offense is, and the continuity of that offense, right? And those guys playing it.
Agreed. Well, and that's the thing, right? If you can tighten it up in the back end, that's kind of the goal. The pass rush is going to be better here in our third quarter, Mike. I mean, Colton Vosick was living in the backfield, doing a great job. We now see him up 25 pounds from his Westlake days. Ethan Burke's going to take another step. We talked about Trey Moore bringing his, you know, pass rushing ability from UTSA. Colin Simmons is there. Baron Sorrell. You know, this is going to be a more, you know, effective pass rushing unit, affecting quarterbacks, affecting passing games. And if you can tie that to the coverage in the back end, now you got something, right? Now you're playing elite offense and potentially elite defense. But obviously they've got to tie together. But I do think the pass rush will be a lot better. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, pass rush is going to be a lot better. Sark talked about after the spring game that fans didn't see it as much as he had saw it during spring. I think that's because of the level of not the quarterback's got the ball out fast. It's the Texas offense does a good job of that. Their offensive tackles are really good. But yeah, this was an interior-based defense last year. You couldn't run the ball in the middle. Tavondre said Byron Murphy demanded all of that attention. The edge wasn't up to snuff. I think the interior of the defensive line is better going into this year than the exterior was last year, right? I think it's a more balanced defensive line. I don't think there's as many holes. But if you can get a good pass rush, if a quarterback's got two seconds to make that decision and throw rather than 3 seconds to make that decision and throw, all of a sudden some of those, you know, that's a Band-Aid. For the secondary, you don't have to worry about the deep passes as much. I do think it's got to work all together because this secondary, I think to this point, has proven it's not good enough just to hold up on its own. It's going to need help from that pass rush.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, that's why when we talk about the portal where Texas is trying to attack defensive tackle, Sark talked about more big bodies, and we'll tell you who they're targeting here in a minute. But I want your thoughts on the linebackers because that's another position in flux here with Jalen Ford off to the NFL. David Benda coming back, I think, is very big. Anthony Hill stepping in. Leona LaFaul, they're guys. I know you talked to Sark and PK about this. You went to practice down there. What do you think about the linebacker position?
Yeah, I think they really like the upside of those young guys like LaFaul. I mean, obviously, Anthony Hill is going to be one of the better linebackers in the SEC if he puts it all together. I think David Benda is kind of the key to that unit. And I think he's got an incredible story. Like the growth, not even on the football field. Remember, this is a guy that got sent away from the Alamo Bowl back when Tom Herman was there, right? Like the growth off the field and on the field by David Benda is a testament to you can't write off 19-year-olds, right? Like some guys just don't figure it out until they're a little bit older. Like they just don't. And I think David Benda is one of those guys. He was new to football in high school, played at Katy Cinco Ranch, hadn't played a ton of football before high school, was the star there. And I think when he got to Texas, there was some culture shock. He was having a little bit too much fun, maybe not in the facility. And I think he felt a little overwhelmed by the talent within that building compared to what he had played against. As he's gotten more mature, he's become a really sound leader and just a really good football player. I think those two next to each other is really good. And the depth is better than it's been, right? I don't know. David Benda is not Jalen Ford, obviously, but I think the second group guys are better than what was behind Jalen Ford previously. I think that's going to help Texas. I don't think that second linebacker is going to be an all-conference type player, but I do think it's going to be a unit that is really good or above average in SEC championship level.
They also brought in the Alabama transfer, Blackshear, who will be back there, big thumper in the middle. Man, they're going to play teams like Georgia and Alabama or Michigan this year. They're going to pound the rock. You got to have those kind of guys that need to be sturdy. And speaking of sturdy, Mike, the defensive tackle position, we found out at game time that Vernon Broughton wasn't there. He was getting married in Paris, Texas, not Paris, France. We had a good debate on the morning show about, you know, if the wife says we're having it on the spring game day, you're just going to show up. That's just the way that works. He probably had no choice. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, his teammates couldn't come to the wedding. They had to be at the spring game. But, you know, mama rules on. That's her day. So Vernon just showed up, so we didn't get to see him. Alfred Collins had the touchdown on the tip ball by Ethan Burke. He looks great. Had, you know, Sark talked about him finding more consistency. He's important. Then there's Sadir Mitchell, and then there's Dre Bledsoe. I mean, there's some guys there. But Sark was pretty adamant afterwards that we need to find more other guys. And the name that has already committed this week since the spring game is the Arizona transfer, Bill Norton. 6'6", 320, coming in, played for Johnny Nansen on that really good defense at Arizona. Of course, Tia Savea is already here, who transferred in before spring. So that's two additions, and they're still working it, Mike. They're in on the kid from TCU, Dominic Williams, freshman, all freshman class at TCU, and had a really strong sophomore year. I know you saw him in high school. That's a big one. I mean, Oklahoma's going hard, LSU, but Texas wants Dominic Williams potentially to be that last piece to that defensive line.
Yeah, to tell you how high I am on Dominic Williams, before he transferred from TCU, I had him as the best defensive lineman in the state, right? Like on the all-Texas team, we kind of isolate the best receiver, best quarterback. But and he started every single game since he showed up at TCU. He was a true freshman starter at nose tackle for a team that played in the national championship game, right? I mean, he is a really, really good football player. He's been in an odd man front, so he hasn't had a lot of stats because his job is just to take up two blocks and let the linebackers go flow. I think he'd be more productive in Texas's system, even in Oklahoma's system. And it just feels like, I guess to me, when you look at the roster and you hear Sark talk, you're like, well, you do have enough bodies, right? I mean, you would think you do with Bledsoe and Mitchell, but those guys are young. Like, they're still 19 years old. I think what Sark has realized over the last couple of years, maybe he knew it before, but I think what's become crystallized in the last couple of years is, you got to be 21, 22 to handle those trenches like that. I mean, you're playing against grown men, and college athletes are getting older and older. I don't know if we're talking about that enough. Like, with the portal and with NIL, guys are sticking around that maybe fifth, sixth, seventh round offensive line draft picks. They're coming back for another year, right? And so you're not playing against fellow 19-year-olds at guard, center, guard. You're playing against 22, 23-year-olds at guard, center, guard. So if you can bring in some upperclassmen to be your depth, to be your starters, now Vernon Broughton's not, you know, your front line guy and play 60 plays a guy. Now he's, you know, playing 30 plays coming off the bench behind a Bill Norton or someone like that. I think all of a sudden it makes the rotation better. And that's what you need in the SEC. If you can dominate, Sark said this to me when I was there doing my one-on-one with him. Every good team he's ever had, whether it be assistant coach, as a player, as a head coach, they're good on the offensive line, they're good on the defensive line, and they're good at quarterback. I think he feels really good about the quarterback and the offensive line. I think he feels really good about three of the four spots on the defensive line. If he can shore up that nose tackle position and find a bully that just can't be moved off, I think, and some depth there, I think all of a sudden he feels like he's got a top five team in terms of offensive line, defensive line, and quarterback, and that's going to win you a lot of football games.
Yeah, that's perfect. I love the age thing too, because I think what you hear Sark saying is, you're right, you just start counting bodies. There's guys there, but you know, Sadir Mitchell's 19, as you said, he's going to be a good player. But just look the last couple of years for Texas. We didn't see the light come on for Devondre Sweat until the very end. Moro Ojomo, Keandre Coburn. It takes a bit. So, and you're going into a season where you want to win the national championship. Yeah. You try to leave no stone unturned, right? As we always say, hope is not a strategy. We hope they get better. We saw Sark do this at wide receiver, where it felt like, hey, we've got Jonte Cook, we've got DeAndre Moore, we've got Ryan Moore coming in, we've got Trey Wingo, Ryan Wingo coming in. No matter. We're going to go bring in Isaiah Bond. We're going to go get, you know, Matthew Golden. We're not going to not have the pieces that we need to go get it. And I kind of think in this day and age of college football, Mike, we see it in college football and basketball, if you're a blue blood, you shouldn't be thin. You really shouldn't be young. You don't have to be. You know what I mean? It's why John Calipari was taking so much heat at Kentucky when they flamed out again. You can be both. I mean, you can be young and talented, and you can fill holes where you need to if you're a blue blood like Texas is. And that's, I like Sark's mindset on that, hey, there's no salary cap in this level. I'm going to keep bringing in guys until we feel really good about it. And speak a little bit more about Dominic Williams, because you just said he's the best lineman in the state. That would be, I mean, if you could land him and beat Oklahoma for him, you're bringing in a draft pick. You're bringing in an NFL player to add to a group that's already got a bunch of draft picks on it.
Yeah, I mean, again, if Dominic Williams commits to Texas, I encourage all Texas fans to go watch the Michigan versus TCU Fiesta Bowl, right? You take away the first quarter, and he clogged it up. Like, Michigan tried to bully TCU, and they couldn't. I think they underestimated how good, and he was 18 years old at that time. Like, he came into high school into college as a 17-year-old, turned 18 during that freshman season, and he's winning a Fiesta Bowl against Michigan, who was the Joe Moore Award winners for best offensive line that year. He's a big, strong dude, you know, squats nearly 600 pounds. I mean, he is the anchor of that Horned Frogs defense. It was a big, big loss for TCU, and it's just a money thing, right? I mean, eventually you can't keep up with the Joneses if you're not one of them. And he's got all those suitors out there. But yeah, you put that guy next to Alfred Collins, and all of a sudden, you know, Texas got one of the better defensive tackle groups again going into the year. You know, Bill Norton's there already. Like that's all of a sudden a 4 or 5 man rotation that can stack up with anybody in the SEC. And I think Sark knows if it's a video game and you can just play the two or three guys they have on the roster right now that they feel really good about, if you know that they're going to be healthy all year, then great. But they're not going to be, because they're like big dudes in the SEC. They're going to get beat up a little bit more this year than they have had in the past. You need 4 or 5 of those guys, right? I mean, think about Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy being behind Moro Ajomo and Keandre Coburn. Those are all 4 NFL players, right? And that's what Texas wants to be on the interior. And that's what they are on the offensive line, right? And so they're trying to match that on a defensive line. That's a scary proposition. If all of a sudden you add Dominic Williams to this defense, the secondary becomes the only real concern.
Yeah, 100% agree. And, you know, to your point about video game, I think that's right on, because Sark, in addition to wanting depth, and you want your best guys out there fresh in the fourth quarter, right? That's when you win football games. Why did Texas take big steps being better in late game situations in fourth quarters? They had more depth, so they were fresher when it mattered. Year one, they didn't have any depth, and they run out of gas by the fourth quarter, blow those leads. Yeah. That's obviously been a focal point. And you're moving into the SEC, you want to be not just fresh, but your best guys get to play their most reps potentially in that fourth quarter when the game's going to be decided. You need a big stop. You need a big drive. That would be Alfred Collins. Obviously, it would be Dominic Williams. The pass rush is better, as we talked about. Anthony Hill flying around. They got to get that secondary sorted out on defense, but do see where they're headed. Obviously, the offense already to the elite level. They need a punter too, Mike, while we're in our third quarter, while we're talking, you know, the defensive side. I know Sark's excited about Matthew Golden, Jontae Cook, what these guys can do on the special teams, but already talked about Trey Wisner, but they do need a punter. They've got a freshman coming in, but you feel good about the place kicking duties with Bert Auburn, but safe to say they'll probably be looking for a punter if they can find one here in the portal the next week.
One of the dorky article ideas that I may never get around to writing, but I would love to dig into more, is like what the NIL market is for like punters and kickers after the spring window, right? Because if you are one of these really good teams, like it's a cherry on top. Like Alabama just took the Lou Groza Award winner from like some G5 team. I can't remember where he went, like Central Michigan or something like that. Like if you're one of those big time programs with some money to spend, and you feel like you're right there for a national championship, it just becomes the cherry on top of the sundae, right? Like, what are we missing? Okay, well, we're a little bit lack at punter. If you're a punter, like, can you hold some of these teams over a barrel, right? Like, what is your market value there? I think Texas would be fine, but yeah, if you got $20,000 to spend, you feel like punters may be a weak spot, you go find a guy to do that for a year. I just think it's great to be like a grad transfer punter. Your market's probably higher than it will be like after you graduate and you're trying to get into the NFL.
Yeah. Ryan Sanborn last year came in after 4 years at Stanford. So got a great degree,
right?
Got a graduate degree, and now he can do whatever.
I would just love to know what the punter makes. Like I think it'd be hilarious. Deep snapper. I'd love to know that stuff.
Love it. All right. That's gonna wrap up our third quarter here. The Eyes on Texas podcast, recapping Texas spring practice. I wanted to start the fourth quarter, Mike. Just your thoughts on your sit down with Sark. I mean, for the magazine, they gave you some time. You got to go down to the facility, talk to the coaches, talk to Sark. You do that for all the teams in Texas. And that's why we said 11 campuses in 15 days. What were your takeaways? You've already said he was very excited, but what did you take from your time with Sark while you were there?
Yeah, it just seems really comfortable in his skin, right? Walking to the office like, hey, dude, you know, like it's just a very laid back, you know, it doesn't have much care in the world. He told me a funny story about the team not letting Drake over because Travis Scott had been there a day before. And I was like, you know, who's the next global superstar that's coming your way? And he kind of told me a story about like last year, they didn't let Drake come hang out with the football team because he'd worn an Alabama hoodie before the Texas Alabama game. And he's also kind of like known as a jinx in the sporting world. And so the players didn't let him go over there. So the first time I sat down with Sark, he was kind of riled up, right? Because like his team wasn't where he wanted to be, and you could tell he knew that, and he was trying to like build some false bravado and talk himself into like liking that first team. He didn't have to do that anymore, right? He seems like a guy who is not only comfortable in his own skin, like in life, maybe as much as he's been as an adult. Like he just feels like he's in a really good spot, and I don't think it's a coincidence that as he's gotten into those good spots as a human, his football teams are getting better and better and better, right? Like talking to Jake Majors, talking to Alfred Collins, talking to Verdon Broughton, they all talked about like Sark's demeanor, his calmness, his confidence, like not his cockiness, but his confidence and how much that's helped the football team. So I kind of go for the vibes, like all coaches talk and coach speak, and he probably told me the same things he said in press conferences. So I don't think I got anything huge or revealing about the roster. But I do feel like I was sitting across from a person who was very confident and comfortable with the roster he's built, and that football has a lot of variables and you don't know how it's going to go, but that they've put themselves in the situation from a culture standpoint and from a talent standpoint to be one of the best teams in the country. And they're not hiding from those expectations going into the SEC, because 3 or 4 years ago, we all kind of talked about like, oh man, I don't know if Texas is ready to go to the SEC. Like they're going to get pantsed when they get to the SEC. They can't handle the Big 12 and Kansas State. Like how are they going to handle the physicality of the SEC? You flash forward 3 years and all of a sudden it feels like SEC may not be ready for Texas outside of Georgia and Alabama. Like they are going to be some bullies in that conference. And there was a lot of confidence and a lot of comfortability coming from Sark and the staff that I talked to.
No doubt about that. It's similar. I'm a Houston Texans fan in the NFL. It's amazing how quickly they flipped that. And all of a sudden with D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud, a quarterback, they're the it organization. People want to go there, right? Saquon Barkley wanted to go to Houston, but you know, they went with Joe Mixon instead. But that's how quickly Sark has flipped it here. And I think his own building of relationships with players, because I believe this, you've been around a long time, Mike. You grew up in the locker room. You know, your best recruiters are your players.
Yes.
So if you're recruiting really well, obviously the NIL thing helps, but a lot of programs out there have NIL dollars. Not Texas isn't the only one. You've got to have relationships, and it's pretty clear. You know, I'm looking right out in my front yard here. You can tell who puts their time into their yards, right? They look great. Then you can tell the people that don't put time into their yards. And you can tell Sark puts a lot of time into it, and his players are the ones selling the program to prospective recruits, right? Saying, hey, man, you're going to like it here. This place is really good. Sark's got it rolling. That's pretty clear. And you got to see it from behind the scenes. And he really does feel like a genuine guy who can relate to these players. He's been to the NFL. He understands it. He's going to recruit good players. That all speaks to him and how his coaches are leading this program right now.
Yeah, because the real NIL for these top-level recruits is the NFL. Like, yeah, you make some good money while you're on campus now if you're a star player, but like you're going to make a generational amount of money if you get to the NFL. And he doesn't have to sell a dream anymore. He doesn't have to sell an idea. He doesn't have to be like, wait until we get this thing turned around. Wait until we start putting in the guys in the NFL. Wait until we start winning. It's real. Like, he's done it. He just has to point to guys. And the guys on the roster just have to point to themselves, to your point, and be like, hey, I was floundering when the last coaching staff got here. I didn't know if I was a good football player anymore. I had a crisis of confidence. I had a couple of the players tell me that, you know, like they didn't know. They didn't know how to win. They just didn't know what was going on. They thought they had plenty of talent. It just wasn't working. And then they started winning some close games. They started winning some games that they used to lose, like that Kansas State game in 2022, I think really was like a moment, like a fulcrum moment for this program of like, hey, that's a game we lost 2 years ago. Now we're winning that football game. You got Keandre Coburn developing into the NFL player. What Christian Jones was able to do and develop into, about to be a second or third round draft pick probably. Like, it no longer is this idea down the road. There's a proof of concept. And I think there comes a confidence from like everything we said, we are now showing. And you don't have to say it as much anymore. You just have to point to the results. And that's got to be a fantastic place to be for a program that hadn't been there in 13, 14 years.
And there seem to be joining that upper class of college football. With all that said, you know, as we record this, the NFL drafts in a couple of days. And, you know, I saw the final ESPN 7-round mock draft, which who knows, but they had 3 Longhorns in the first round with Byron Murphy, you know, the Chiefs trading up to take, with the Cowboys, by the way, to take Xavier Worthy. A.D. Mitchell, I saw your story, by the way, at Dave Campbell's Texas Football on Adonai. That's a really well-written story about his child and why he came back to Texas. They have him going to the Buffalo Bills for Josh Allen, pick 28. And then Jonathan Brooks, I mean, like everybody has Jonathan Brooks mocked to the Cowboys at 56.
Yeah. To me, that says that won't happen.
Right? I know.
Like that just means like a curse of death there. Like sources are saying that too openly to people that like they're building, like I wouldn't be surprised if the Cowboys took a different running back or something.
Yeah, well, the Mike Fisher, who's covered that team for a long time, he's their insider. He even said he talked to a source that said they've kind of zeroed in on Jonathan because their team doctor, who's one of the best orthopedics in the country, did his surgery. He goes to his checkups with him. So they know more than anybody else how that injury is coming back, and they feel really good about it. And they love Jonathan Brooks. And the Cowboys have a history of taking first-round talents in the second round that mm-hmm. they feel like they're getting great value on, that there maybe there's a injury history, or Randy Gregory with the drug history, but he had a first-round grade for them. Those kind of players. And, you know, Trayvon Diggs was that kind of player for the Cowboys. So we'll see. He ended up in the second round. Now he's an all-pro. They really like my guy, Jonathan Brooks, our guy. And as you mentioned, then it's Tavondre Sweat tumbling into the fourth round based on his offseason, and then the DUI. Could go earlier than that, but he's feeling like a guy that goes late third, early fourth. And you mentioned Christian Jones. This is one of the great stories. Christian Jones, if he had gone into the draft last year, wouldn't have been drafted.
Yep.
Now he's likely a fourth-round pick, maybe third, as you said. He can play tackle. He can play guard. They love his attitude and his intelligence. And just because he's still learning the game of football, but it, to me, shows Kyle Flood's impact on these guys, because the Longhorns were not developing offensive linemen at all. They had all, and then you turn on the game on Saturday, they have bad offensive line play. That's obvious. Well, now the opposite is true. We're guys who wouldn't have been drafted. To me, Christian Jones this year is the Tavondre Sweat or Moro Ojomo of last year, where these guys weren't going to get drafted, and now they are.
Yeah, I mean, just think about that offensive line. Like, what's happened with Jake Majors and the steps that he's taken to be a really, really good center for the Longhorns, even though it feels like everybody tried to bench him for the last 3 years, right? Like, Hayden Connor is a three-star, because like that's the thing. Like, Texas has all of these four-star, five-star offensive line recruits, and some of them are starting to transfer out because they can't beat out Jake Majors. They can't beat out Hayden Connor. They couldn't beat out Christian Jones. So those are all three-star guys that I just mentioned on that offensive line last year that wins a conference championship and was close to winning the Joe Moore Award. Like, Jake Majors told me, I interviewed him, he told me that in the position group room for Texas, that they have the criteria for the Joe Moore Award up on the wall. And wow, every time they're going through plays, Kyle Flood points to it and goes, that one matched. That's how you win the Joe Award, or vice versa. That's not how, you know, those are the type of plays that you don't win that Joe Moore Award. I just don't remember the Texas offensive line having that mindset before. Like, we're going to go be the best offensive line in the country. We're going to mash people. We're going to be the bullies of this football team. Like, right or wrong, fair or not, Texas was considered a soft program for a long time. And I said that to Sark, right? Like, I've been around this football team for a long time. They've always been a really, even bad years, they've had a really good 7-on-7 football team. There was always wide receivers. There was always cornerbacks. There's always a quarterback or two, right? But they just didn't have the trenches. And I think that they, when they got here, realized that. And part of the plan was to become, you know, Alabama and Texas. And they are starting to become that. The development, I mean, Christian Jones was a soccer player growing up that just didn't really know a ton about football. I just think it's night and day what he became under Kyle Flood's tutelage. You've seen it with DJ Campbell and some other guys as well. Flood may be the best offensive line coach in the country, honestly.
Yeah, well, when he came here, and that's what Sark said about him, his offensive line at Alabama had just won the Joe Moore Award, and they had that offense that was unstoppable, and that's what they're trying to build here, because all those deep shot plays for Quinn Ewers down the field, you got to be able to protect. They want to run the ball and set up play action, and that all starts with that line of scrimmage. And obviously a great line of scrimmage offensively should help your defensive line develop the steel sharpening steel.
You don't have to bring a tight end in. You don't have to leave a running back in. Like, you're allowed to like have five options in a route, and somebody's going to be open because you don't have to help your offensive line.
Yeah, and you make the defense react to you, and try to. As we talked about with a guy like Ryan Wingo coming on the scene with all that talent. Hey, Mike, last thing I want to do before we wrap this thing up in our fourth quarter. It's a great conversation. Send it to a friend. Recap in the spring, all the conversations for Texas into the offseason, an offseason with a ton of expectations. The portal, obviously, Longhorn's still active. But you were down at the A&M spring game. Now that it's a conference game at the end of November, you did get to talk to Mike Elko. You know, no more Big 12 conversations for Longhorn fans. What you take from that situation, you know, comparing to where Texas is to where Mike Elko has it right now?
I thought what Michael Elko did in the spring game was really cool. They have two captains, and they just let them do a schoolyard pick, right? So it wasn't first team here, second team here. It was just, you know, okay, Trey Zunes, one captain, Torian York's one captain, pick your football teams. And what I thought was really funny is he called what the first pick for each player was going to be. Trey Zunes, a left tackle, and he figured he'd pick the best rusher so he didn't have to block him, and that was Nick Skirton. And then Torian York's a linebacker. And he figured he would pick the best defensive tackle. So he had somebody in front of him to take up blocks. And he picked DJ Hicks. I think the defense for A&M is going to be good. They brought in like 9 different guys through the transfer portal in the secondary. I couldn't tell you who the starting five is going to be, but I think that they're going to find 5 guys. Mike Elko's a safety coach by trade. Like, they're going to be good in the secondary. Nick Skirton, the edge rusher from Purdue, he led the Big Ten last year in sacks. He's a College Station Bryan native, actually, who's now back home, a junior. He was unblockable. Like, he was an absolute terror. You combine him with Shamar Stewart on the other edge. I think A&M's going to have a really good pass rush. They're going to have a really good front 7. The defense is going to be good. I think the issue for A&M, and it was Sark's issue when he got to Texas, is you can't, no matter how much NIL you have, no matter how much you portal, you cannot fix offensive line in one window. You just can't do it. Like, that is one of those positions that you still have to do with the old school way of developing guys, and it's going to take a year or two to get SEC championship level along the offensive line, and they're just not there yet. I think they have a really good left tackle. I think they got a really good left guard. The other 3 spots are wide open. They're just bringing in a Utah transfer to be their center because it sounds like Bryce Foster may be giving up football. Right tackle is the biggest question mark on that football team. Unless they figure that out, it doesn't really matter how much skill position they have or how much talent they have at quarterback. They've lost a starting quarterback for the 4 straight years, dating back into the Jimbo era because of the bad offensive line play. So to me, I think if you look at the schedule, A&M's probably going to win 7 or 8 games. Like, I think they're going to be an okay football team. The 4 hardest teams that they play are all at home. They play LSU, Mizzou, Texas, and Notre Dame at home. So like that, the schedule works out for them. But I just don't think you can win consistently in the SEC with a subpar offensive line. And I feel like they still have a subpar offensive line.
Great stuff as usual. Yeah, that Notre Dame game will be fast approaching. Inside 130 days now to Texas, Colorado State, Notre Dame at Texas A&M. And of course, we're all eager to see the November 30th showdown with the Aggies. Hey, Mike, great stuff as usual on the Eyes on Texas Multicast, part of the Dave Campbell's Texas Football Podcast Network. Tell folks how they can be a part of Dave Campbell's, all the coverage, the online, the magazine, what's coming in July, and of course, how they find the podcast.
Yeah, texasfootball.com is where we put all of our stuff. We're not just a magazine. We do digital stuff every day. As E mentioned, I did a story on Adonai Mitchell and kind of his growth and the birth of his daughter and how much that's meant to him and just, you know, his maturity and just kind of how he's grown up over the last couple of years. The magazine's going to come out in July. We're working really hard behind the scenes on that. You kind of do all the content in April, all the design stuff in May. And then because I'm a psychopath, I also have the book project going on. I just got the first 4 chapters sent to me from the design. It looks really, really cool. And that's going to be out in late July, early August as well. So, yeah, it's been a busy few months for me, but it's been a lot of reward. I also figured out how to get married in there. And unlike Vernon Broughton, I didn't miss anything. I scheduled that one pretty well before my tour went out. I won that argument. And so, yeah, it's been a busy 2024, honestly, on the Craven side of life here.
Well, it sounds like a good one. Got married, writing the magazine, that the Bible of Texas football, high school and college, and trying to figure out this portal thing for a magazine that won't come out till July. Good stuff right there, guys. It's a podcast, Multicast, that keeps you on top of all things Texas football. Available to watch weekly on the Dave Campbell's Texas Football podcast page, texasfootball.com, available for download on iTunes and or Spotify. Download it when you're driving all over Texas like Mike and listen to it. If you want to do that, you can also watch it. And Mike, appreciate it. Great stuff, my friend. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks when the roster is set, the portal kind of closes, and see where we are.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.